The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hello, I'm Richard Suchet, and welcome to the LBC Daily Debrief once again, the podcast that brings you the full story on the day's biggest news. We start with the President's Club, a men's-only auction night at the Dorchester Hotel in London, where women were allegedly groped and sexually harassed. We'll bring you everything you need to know on that one. Plus, more on the shocking news that Cape Town is set to run out of water in less than 80 days. We'll speak to the journalist Tim Butcher to see how people are coping. And
I want to go Gaza. I come in here in a train, I go back in a train. I tried before, I go lorry and police catch me.
What, trying to climb on a lorry to go back through the tunnel to go to France?
I go to France because I want to go back in my country.
It's the extraordinary case of a Calais jungle migrant being forced to stay in the UK even though he wants to leave. We'll have more on that one. Now, the organisers of a men-only charity dinner for wealthy donors have said they're appalled by allegations of sexual harassment at the event. Undercover Financial Times journalists reported that waitresses were groped and propositioned by guests at the President's Club annual fundraiser at London's Dorchester Hotel. Hostesses were allegedly told to wear black underwear and sexy black shoes for their shift. One attendee reportedly said, "I want you to down that glass, rip off your knickers and dance on that table." Another allegedly exposed himself. Two children's hospitals are going to return all donations they've received from the club. Evelina London Children's Hospital says it's alarmed at the claims, while Great Ormond Street says the nature of the event was wholly unacceptable. The LBC Daily Debrief's Lucy Hoff has been following the story.
Richard, this was described by one of the hosts as the most un-PC event of the year, a men-only charity fundraiser attended by 360 power players from the world of business, politics and finance. The only women allowed were hired hostesses who are said to have been repeatedly groped and propositioned by the male guests. And working amongst them that night were two undercover reporters from the Financial Times. They've said they were encouraged to wear high heels, matching underwear and skimpy clothing. They were encouraged to drink alcohol, and they were repeatedly touched inappropriately by the guests. One 19-year-old girl was reportedly asked if she was a prostitute. Another said a man exposed himself to her during the course of the evening. Now, in the Commons today, the Education Minister, Anne Milton, said she was shocked by what's said to have happened that night.
It is quite extraordinary to me, Mr. Speaker, that in the 21st century, allegations of this kind are still emerging. Women have the right to feel safe wherever they work.
The fundraiser has been running for more than 30 years and has raised more than 20 million for charity during that time. This year, 2 million was raised for charities like the Children's Hospital Great Ormond Street. But since these allegations have come to light, charities are now refusing to accept the donations. And the co-chair of the President's Club, businessman David Mellor, has resigned from his position as a director at the Department of Education. Labour MP Jess Phillips says she's welcomed this decision.
I noticed that the organisation wishes to put it onto the individual members, where actually what happened was that women were bought as bait for men who are rich men, not a mile from where we stand, as if that is an acceptable behaviour. It is totally unacceptable.
Also under fire is the comedian David Walliams, who was the host for the evening. In tweets sent this afternoon, he says he was there in a strictly professional capacity, that he left at 11:30 p.m. after he'd finished presenting, and he didn't see the type of behaviour that's been reported. Questions are also being asked of senior Tory minister Nadeem Zahawi, who is said to have attended. Now, a spokesperson for the President's Club, which is the organisation behind this event, says they are appalled by the allegations, and it says they will be investigating them fully.
That's the LBC Daily Debrief's Lucy Hoff. Now, coming up,
Mohammed, do you want to go back to Gaza?
Yes, I come in here in a train, I go back in a train. I tried before, I go lorry and police catch me.
It's the Kafkaesque case of the migrant who doesn't want to stay in the UK, but has no home country to go to. Our political editor Theo Usherwood will explain all. But first, shocking news from Cape Town, which will run out of water in less than 80 days. Supplies are running low, and once they reach 13.5%, the water will be completely shut off, except for places like hospitals. The city, which attracts millions of tourists every year, has enforced strict waste controls, including prosecuting homeowners who use more than the 50-litre daily limit. However, the measures haven't been enough, forcing local officials to bring forward day zero by 9 days to April the 12th. Well, joining me now is the journalist and author Tim Butcher, who lives in Cape Town. Good to speak to you, Tim. Just explain what the situation is like out there now.
Well, we're high summer here, and of course, summer seasonal. There's nothing odd about that. But what's odd this year is that they're talking about turning the mains water off. No water in the tap, no water for sprinkling in the gardens, no water for swimming pools, and much more importantly, no water to wash with or cook with from your mains. So it's a very, very different summer to normal.
And what is the atmosphere like? Are people worried? Are people taking this warning seriously? They must be by now, surely.
Of course they are. Yes, absolutely. But, I mean, it's so cataclysmic. It's so unreal that you're thinking that there won't be any water in this entire city. It would be the first major city in the world to run dry. There have been a few smaller cities. Windhoek in Namibia had problems. And, of course, Las Vegas is rationing water at some times of the year in Nevada in the United States. This is the first major city, 4 million people, switching off. And that is very, very dramatic. So, yes, people are concerned. They've been trying all sorts of what's called, in sort of, you know, planning terms, demand management means, which is basically reduce your water. Put a brick in the cistern of your loo so every time it flushes, it's using a smaller amount of water. Don't flush your loo. If it's yellow, let it mellow, that sort of thing. If it's brown, send it down. But these things have proved to be absolutely inadequate because of a catastrophic failure in the winter rain. This city has always relied on winter rain. If winter rains come, the reservoirs fill. During those hot summer months, the reservoirs can be drained. But for three winters now, very little top-up to those reservoirs. They've got shallower and shallower and shallower. The photographs are dramatic. You're seeing sort of lakes turned into deserts. And that's what we're facing now.
But surely there's an element of bad management here. I mean, you cannot rely solely on the weather, can you? And, you know, if you think that there's a risk, even if there's a small risk, that you may not get as much rain as you need, then you put these water management systems in place earlier. Surely, you know, to be less than 80 days out from day zero, as they're calling it, that screams to me mismanagement.
Can you blame? Well, frankly, you know, I think that we're past the blame game. We're past, you know, pointing fingers at different party that runs the city or runs the council. You know, we're way past that. We've got to work out how are you going to get water to 4 million people. At the moment, they're saying that on April the 12th, which isn't very far away, as you quite rightly said, this entire city is going to be turned off the mains water. People have to go and queue up at standpipe, at sort of tankers. So you do the math, they're offering 200 of these places. That's 20,000 people gathering at every single one. I mean, that's like going to a Leeds United home match with a bottle, with a tank, with some sort of container of water and standing politely in the queue. The problem is civil disorder. How people are going to lose their time, they're going to get impatient, and how are you going to organise that? So whilst the blame game might be, you know, trying to settle, you know, which political parties took a decision 10 years out, you're having to deal with the reality now, and it's only a few days away. You feel like, frankly, people in the city here feel like you're sort of tied to the railway track and there's a locomotive coming bearing down and no one's untying you. The only hope now is if some magical sort of switch happens in the track and the train goes on a siding and doesn't run over you. But at the moment,
in other words, you hope it's going to rain.
Well, I hope it's going to rain. And there is another variable in this. We have 80 days and some very heavy hitting World Bank water experts have been here for the last 20, 30 days. And I say heavy hitting, these are the people who go to Mogadishu and try and bring in water. These are people who go to do with cholera outbreaks in Harare or Ebola outbreaks in Monrovia, Liberia. So, you know, these are very experienced. What they do is actually they fly X-ray machines, X-ray tracking things in the sky, and you can find out where large bodies of water are beneath the ground, called aquifers. And they have found some dramatically large aquifers, actually huge, huge reservoirs, and numbing sort of mega trillions and trillions of litres of water, accessible if only you drill for them. The issue is getting the drilling done. So perhaps the siding, that railway locomotive, will be flipped off into a siding because they can drill down to those aquifers. Or else, we're all going to have to be queuing up with 19,999 other people on April the 12th.
Yeah,
and into the bottle in a tube.
Yeah, a really scary time. Tim Butcher, really appreciate your time here. Thanks for speaking to us on the LBC Daily Debrief. That's the journalist and author, Tim Butcher. You will have seen the dramatic footage of migrants in Calais trying to clamber onto lorries destined for the UK. It's been on our TV screens for years now. Drivers desperately trying to defend their cargoes while French police use batons and tear gas to prevent people from boarding the trucks as they arrive at the port. Well, now the LBC Daily Debrief has uncovered the story of one migrant who's become so desperate with his life in Britain, homeless and without a job, that he's tried to get back on a lorry heading for France, only to be told he has to stay in the UK. Our political editor, Theo Ashwood, picks up this astonishing story.
This is the story of a man called Mohammed Al-Mustafa. He's 36 years old. He was only 5 when he fled his home in Palestine-occupied Gaza with his parents. Mohammed spent his childhood in Iraq, Syria and Egypt. And then, with his parents having died, he travelled across Europe, finally making it to the UK in 2010.
I stayed in Cali 6 months.
Was that in the jungle?
Yeah.
Camp?
Camp, Cali. Okay, and I try, and police catch me, I stay 24 hours and leave me, and I try again. And after I come in lorry, and I go up, it's big dangerous, you know. And after, lorry go in station and go in a train, inside train. And after, I come in Dofa, and car leave train and go.
Mohammed had initially headed for Liverpool, hoping to get himself on a ship bound for Canada, where he has an uncle. But that proved impossible, and having had his asylum application turned down, he was left homeless and destitute, without the right to work in the UK. In desperation, he even tried to return to Gaza.
Mohammed, do you want to go back to Gaza?
Yes, my heart, and I want to go Gaza. I come in here in a train, I go back in a train. I tried before, I go lorry and please catch me.
What, trying to climb on a lorry to go back through the tunnel to go to France?
I go to France because I want to go back in my country, Palestinian. But please catch me in Dofa and tell me you can live here. It should be stay in UK. You understand? I sleep in the street. Where I go?
That was one of 3 attempts to return to Gaza. But now Mohammed finds himself in a legal limbo. If he was from anywhere else, the government would simply contact his home country. However, it cannot apply for him to be repatriated because the UK does not recognise Palestine as a sovereign country. What's more, if Mohammed did make it to France and had been caught, he would have been returned to the UK as he's already made a claim for asylum when he first arrived. Now Mohammed has to be classed as stateless, a move that would allow him to live and work in the UK for 2.5 years. But officials say they don't believe he's from Palestine after he failed to accurately draw its flag and sing the national anthem. That's despite having twice previously advised him to return to Palestine.
I'm in UK, democratic country. Everything is good, okay? I'm a human. Just I'm a human. I see him always looking to me like a human, okay? Sometime I need, like everybody, I need everything is good for me. I need peace.
For its part, the Home Office has accepted 64 applications for statelessness since 2013. That's around 5% of the total. A spokesman sent me a statement simply saying that it does not comment on individual cases.
The LBC Daily Debrief's Theo Ashwood there. Such an interesting case, isn't it? We'll bring you more on that one as it develops. But for now, I'm afraid to say that I must call time on your LBC Daily Debrief. But worry not, only for today. I'm Richard Suchet, and we'll be back to give you the full story on the day's biggest news tomorrow. In the meantime, make sure to hit subscribe so that you never miss your daily update. And if you've enjoyed today's programme, please do leave us a review. But of course, the news doesn't stop with this podcast. Make sure you listen to LBC on digital radio, FM in London, or online at lbc.co.uk.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere. This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.